Hello and welcome to Quote Unquote Guilty, the only guilty pleasure podcast with air quotes in the title. I am your host. My name is Joe Ketchum, and I'm joined today by two returning guests. We have Jeff Burnham. How's it going, Jeff?
I'm doing all right. I thought you were going to say something very un-PC about us.
What rhymes with returning?
No, I'm joined today by two returning guests.
Oh, gosh.
I was like, where is this going?
Man, your mind jumps right to the gutter.
And my name is Tyler Pistorius. I am also a co-host of the podcast Cinemuck.
Yes.
Which is also featured on Wood Salad Productions.
Wood Salad. You're already in the commando mode.
Oh, there are all kinds of wood all in the wood. This movie.
All the wood salad, yeah. All this macho bullshit.
Literally, that's the line. Yes.
Fuck you.
See, how's we haven't going, even started Tyler? Talking about. I'm doing wonderful, Joe. It's great to be back. Thank you for having me on. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. So few people ask me how I'm doing.
Well, I mean, isn't that what you're supposed to do?
I don't care how you're doing.
I know you don't.
So you're one of those when I ask you how you doing. I'm good. Thanks.
Well, not so bad.
Hanging in there, I guess.
Going crazy down there by the lake.
It's actually, speaking of Jeff, I do want to thank you for talking to me about this upcoming podcast in particular with Commando, because you know how much of a fan I am of this movie.
And we're both going Commando in honor of Commando.
Oh, wait. And I am also Commando. Wow, that's surprising.
Take it off, listeners. We don't care where you are. Are you on the train? Doesn't matter. Take it off. Go
imagine
Commando.
Joe right now just in his t-shirt and nothing else.
Well, I don't have to imagine it. We live together.
I got my pajama pants on and nothing else.
Oh, all right.
That all never right. happened when we lived together. This is a strange place for this podcast to go automatically. But
I don't know. I don't
think living together
the,
we ever saw each other
all
naked.
All the homoerotic subtext that happens in Commando, I don't know.
Never seen Jeff naked, unfortunately. He likes to keep the light off when we make love.
Oh, boy. But at this point, all three of us have at least seen Arnold naked, because we're of course talking about the film Commando, which
oh,
is
are we?
Follow up to the follow up movie of Arnold Schwarzenegger's to The Terminator, and I think that's important to bring up because not only do you see him mostly naked throughout a certain portions of the movie, but there are also three lines directly lifted from The Terminator that make it into this movie. Let's see, the lines are "I'll be back, Bennett." Let's see.
I love the "I'll be back, Bennett" moment in The Terminator.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, that's my favorite.
I'll be I mean, back, that was Bennett. that was the receptionist's name, right, Bennett?
Yeah, Bennett.
Was it really Bennett?
No,
he's okay. Not named.
I didn't think
he's
so.
Just guy. He's just guy who gets hit by police car. Well, turns into a dummy and is violently hit by a police car.
Yeah.
And then let's see the other two lines. I know one of them is "Fuck you, asshole," and then actually the first one of the three is the way he says "wrong" to the first guy that he shoots who invades his house.
Oh, okay.
Jeff has motioned me to come a little bit forward. Sorry for my lack of professionalism.
You're
a bad posture.
It's like recording with Al all over again.
First of all, our recording's going to be ruined. Second of all, you're going to get spinal bifida.
What? Oh, no. I don't know what that is. I don't think I want to know what that is.
Oh, I think it's a genetic thing. I don't think you can get spina bifida, but it's like a disfigurement of the spine that usually results in paralysis.
Oh, no, you can also catch it by listening to Quote Unquote Guilty.
Oh. Oh, God. If only I had known. I'm so sorry to all of our spina bifida retroactive listeners.
I suppose now is a good time to try and get back on topic with the 1985 20th Century Fox.
Show. Man, he's a real stickler for being on topic.
Mark,
I don't remember
Lester
this in the Freddy Got Fingered episode.
I'm dying.
Well, with Freddy Got Fingered, that is a horse of a different color, and that includes the color red.
Look at my hooves.
Yes, that includes the color red. It includes the color black and white. Oh, look God. At me, Daddy. I'm a farmer.
Look at my hooves.
But Tyler's right. It does make sense that this is a follow-up to the Terminator because Arnold acts like a robot through most of the movie, especially like at the very beginning. It looks like he's trying to kill Sarah Connor with a great big tree.
Yeah. Well, you know, okay. So the thing that's weird to me about watching Commando kind of every time is you'd swear Schwarzenegger wrote it for himself.
Oh my God.
It's like, a vanity piece. He forgot to write for himself, almost. You know?
It's like a vanity piece that he didn't have to write for himself. Like, others could do it for him. Because, like, before he went to movies, he was already Mr. Universe, and he won that, what, 7 times?
Sounds about right.
Yeah, 7 times. And then, he had done, like, a few appearances throughout the 70s, one of which I do want to see. I forget the name of it, but it's him and Jeff Bridges and Sally Field and Robert Englund.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. You know that,
I have no idea what you're talking about.
But that is a movie from the 70s that exists that has those following 4 actors that I just listed off.
It's not Hercules in New York, is it?
No.
Does Sally Field play the little Jewish guy?
No, actually, I think it's supposed to be like some straightforward drama. And this was before Conan the Barbarian, and then, of course, the Terminator. And and the Terminator, again, cannot be mentioned enough because Arnold is basically just the most efficient killer on the planet. And I would say his John Matrix is a far more efficient killer than even the Terminator. And I'm including both Terminators 1, 2, and 3, and I'm assuming Genesis.
It's Genesis.
Because the body count in
Genoa Slice
in Commando is 109, and of all the kills, 102 of them are committed solely by Arnold Schwarzenegger as John Matrix.
That's pretty good.
There's 109 deaths in this movie. That's surprising.
And only 7 of them are not caused by Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah,
only 7. Yeah,
109. That's just minute per minute. That's really good. I mean, they come out over 1 a minute, you know,
over
for this
one
movie.
Minute, absolutely, yeah.
That's good. That's keeping it up.
I mean, that's the thing, because like a movie like Commando knows exactly what it is. It doesn't overstay its welcome. Because, it runs at like a pretty much a brisk 90 minutes.
It's 90 almost on the dot.
Yeah, and if you watch the director's cut, I think it's only a difference by, I say, not even a whole minute. It's just like a few additional lines of dialogue, like a weird line change of Alyssa Milano's. That's because the actress dubbing her sounds nothing like her. Because they probably lost the audio to that.
Gotcha.
I'm guessing they lost the audio. It's a line where she's talking to Dan Hedaya's character. I think Arias is his name. He's the guy from Valverde. Who wants to have Arnold Schwarzenegger execute the president who Schwarzenegger's character helped overthrow Dan Hedaya.
And none of that has anything to do with anything. That's what's amazing to me about this movie is like
we don't see a president
the narrative
or anything like that. Yeah, the narrative is just
completely fabricated off screen to give Schwarzenegger a reason to show up on an island for a half hour and kill everybody.
That was like my big note at the end when they were like trying to set up a sequel and he was like, no, never. And he's walking off and the credits are rolling. I'm like, wait, did he kill the president guy? Like, what's going to stop them from doing this all over again?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I mean, I don't know about now, but like that's if any movie was ripe for a sequel, or at least at the time, Commando is it.
That they didn't make 7 or 8 of these things is a shocker.
That is, yeah.
Because the formula of Commando is basically this. Have you seen an action movie? Yes. You know those climaxes in action movies? Yes. Don't you love those? Yes. How about we do that for an entire movie? The whole movie's a climax? Yes. Like the first thing he does is like, I mean, when he's got the truck, you know,
because they ruin the
engine and he goes down the mountain.
He pushes it down the mountain, gets in the driver's seat and is driving and almost hits the other bad guys.
That's the climax of a totally different movie.
Yes, it is.
And it's the first thing that happens.
It's the opening action sequence. It's amazing. Whenever he misses, the truck will flip over. It flips over and it's already on fire. But Arnold comes out. He doesn't have a scratch on him or anything.
Nah, he's A-okay.
He's A-okay. No seatbelt, nothing. Because, I mean, this guy is just basically an indestructible mountain.
Flying down an indestructible mountain.
He shows up on screen with 9 feet of wood.
And like, 9 feet of yeah, wood. And
first thing
a,
we
he
see.
He is a shining, glistening, jiggling mountain of a man.
I am so
I mean, we
so
see
hard.
His muscles before his face, the rest of his body. I mean, then his wood, his massive
whenever
wood.
He, whenever he walks into shot and the camera's looking down on him, like that proper intro shot of him.
Oh, it's incredible.
Close-ups, and he's backlit like this mountainous gay angel of death.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just
I mean,
swinging his dick around. I mean, tree around. Excuse me. Not. Yeah. I'm sorry,
no, it's not symbolic of anything. No, it's not a metaphor.
None whatsoever.
it certainly doesn't come back later when he throws a massive pipe through
back
Bennett.
So you understand where this movie is going. Intentional or unintentional?
Like, the homoeroticism in this movie is something that a lot of people talk about and write about. If you haven't seen it before, people's feelings might be like, okay, people are just blowing it out of proportion. But this movie is... The whole last fight between him and Bennett begins with him going, Bennett, don't you want to... penetrate me and
I
look
can
me
read,
in the
I,
eyes.
I'll just read you the
eyes. Tyler's gonna do a monologue here.
Okay.
Written down here. Come on, Bennett. Throw away the chicken shit gun. You don't just want to pull a trigger. Put a knife in me and look me in the eye and see what's going on in there when you turn it. Let the girl go. Don't deprive yourself of some pleasure.
Pleasure.
Come on, Bennett. Let's party. And then Bennett, I mean, that line is, that whole monologue is nothing if not pornographic.
Yeah. You're slightly more Werner Herzog than Schwarzenegger. I'll say that.
I mean, my
oh, which
my
is an improvement. I love, you gotta replace all of Arnold Schwarzenegger with Werner Herzog.
Hey, all right.
Bennett.
I'll take
call
it.
Call me by your name and I'll call you by mine.
You must let off some steam, Bennett. Because all fucking hell is going to break loose. Fuck you, asshole. But after that, don't deprive yourself of some pleasure speech, Bennett responds with, I mean, he's just like shaking. And his eyes are
And he's wearing
wide.
Like double fishnets.
Double fishnets that are a little too small for him. And there is a reason for that, which, of course, results in, I think, cinema history when it comes to these type of
villains. I think this movie's amazing.
He says, I don't need the girl. I don't need the gun, John. He don't need no gun. And he's like, I'm going to kill you now.
And he starts shaking.
It's like, I feel like he's just like orgasming in his pants. And then their fight scene.
He's like practically drooling.
Yeah. He's salivating. Like fluids are coming out of him from all orifices. Okay.
So the homoeroticism.
So that's the antagonist.
The homoeroticism thing is not something that people are just blowing out of proportion.
It's the whole, explicitly
it's
in the movie.
There. I mean, the movie has the pretense of not being... Like, it's got the line in the beginning, which we'll call the no-homo line, where Schwarzenegger says something
about Boy George.
Yeah, why don't they just call him Girl George? It'll save a lot of confusion
or
whatever.
It's like, thank you. Thank you, Reagan era Hollywood.
Yeah,
thank you
exactly.
So much.
That's the no-homo, but we're going to penetrate the hell out of each other for the next 90 minutes.
I mean, exactly, which is why I think this movie is brilliant, like kind of against brilliant despite all that, because it hilariously backfires on itself.
Oh yeah.
Like going from the Boy George diss to just the fact that Arnold is every scene that he is in, like his skin glistens under the lighting every single time, whether he's in the shopping mall or whether he's at the hotel and that fight with Bill Duke, and especially whenever he's actually about to go on the island where he's just wearing nothing but a Speedo.
Oh my god.
Like they apply like moisture, they have to apply like some kind of like water or moisture to his skin.
He's naturally like that.
Because
he
just
no.
Or like he's
he secretes
he's naturally like that.
Yeah.
He secretes olive oil.
Sweating is necessary for the human body. Man, I just can't imagine how much he must have stunk whenever he was doing those car scenes with Ray Don Chong, and like how close they have to get to each other, especially whenever he like opens up her shirt to make it look like that she was having sex with Sully in the hotel.
Which is plausible. Sully pulls.
Yeah. Oh, especially after that interaction, that glorious display.
He always gets the ladies with the "you fucking whore."
Yeah, they can't. They can't resist that.
And they're like, "Oh, what'd you call me?" Ooh,
she's called a hooker at one point by one of the guys.
I was going to ask that. Like, was it one of the police officers who says, "Look, it's a hooker."
He's like, "Hey," he's like, "Say, look into her."
Or does he say a looker?
Oh, oh looker no. makes more sense, but I thought said hooker.
Here's, this is exactly what he says. He's looking out the window. He sees Ray Don John pull up, and he says to her, hey. He turns to the driver and goes, hooker.
Okay.
I had the subtitles on when I was revisiting this for, I think, the 20th time. I've seen this movie a lot. Like, a lot as a kid and a lot as an adult. It's one that I've shown to a lot of people for the first time.
I haven't watched it in a while, but I used to, when I was a kid, just watch the end a lot. Like, I watched the third act over and over and over again.
I don't know that I ever saw anything from, like, the airport to the island. I don't know that I ever saw any of that until I was an adult.
I mean, it's sort of like from whenever Arnold is running to the island, and then there's that montage of him gearing up. And then once it's all done and the camera's down, and then that wonderful James Horner score with the steel kettle drum that you hear, is that the instrument you hear a lot in that one?
I don't. I watched it this morning. I don't even remember.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think it's a yeah. And then of course once again he's backlit like an angel of death, a very much a gay angel of death,
shiny glistening. Wood bearing.
The wonderful James Horner score just crescendos, and then that's what it goes into. No dialogue, just Arnold killing people in all kinds of ways.
Can we talk about the before we're introduced to Arnold? We got like the cold opening to the movie where Arnold's garbage team keeps getting taken out by Cook.
Yes, Bill Duke as Cook.
Yeah,
they just they show up to this guy's house.
And they fake a garbage day.
They fake a garbage day, basically.
which they know, garbage like, oh, he's gonna wake up and forget that he put his garbage out, and he's gonna run out, and we can blow him away with machine guns. That's so elaborate.
Yeah, they're counting on a lot of things.
They knew what the schedule was for the garbage trucks that go by that street. They knew that in advance. We're led to assume.
I assume they cased it out, but you know.
Just
kick his door in and shoot him.
I mean, we don't see that, but I don't need to see that because it would never be as memorable as him coming out to the end of the driveway with the garbage cans in hand. And then Bill Duke comes out, shoots him about 9 to 10 times with his submachine gun. But then, because this is the 80s.
It's like an Uzi.
It's an Uzi, yeah. But because it's the 80s, he has to walk up and confirm the kill by shooting him like another 20 times while he's on the ground.
And Bill Duke, his character was not in Matrix's team, right? It was just Bennett.
It was just Bennett. Just Bennett. Cook was just like a mercenary for the mercenary Bennett.
It was so weird to me. Because Cook is set up as like the big villainous henchman. He's set up as like the Gary Busey Lethal Weapon character. But he gets taken out halfway through the movie in a hotel room pretty easily. I was like, he's set up as the big bad, not Bennett, not chubby Australian Bennett. I don't buy for a second that this guy that gets kicked out of Arnold's team, probably for being completely incompetent, you know, is the main primary threat of the film.
Well, I don't know if it was because he was incompetent or because maybe Bennett was making some like advances on Matrix back in their army.
Oh, that's a good call, because there is that weird, maybe it was like a weird, like murderous, like almost cruising type tension.
Almost like a cruising like type a sexual murder, tension that would have sex ended murder with, thing. That would have ended with like Arnold tied to a bed and he just like stabs him to death in the back.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing is like, no, you make a good point, Joe, that yeah, Cook would be like kind of the more efficient heavy compared to this clearly out of shape guy who's in the army and the wardrobe wonderfully doesn't fit him because the original actor who played the character, who I don't know the name of, was fired, and so he was replaced, but it was so last minute that they couldn't afford to get a wardrobe that fitted him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But then like that weird subtext that just happens to be in this movie.
I don't know, man. He owns it though.
He does own it. I mean, this is Vernon Wells we're talking about, who I think is a wonderful, wonderful character actor.
Well, when you think about it, his character of Bennett is kind of like his character in The Road Warrior.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's like he's evil, and there's like the homoerotic. You know, mm-hmm. It's actually not subtext in Road Warrior though, because he's got the boy toy.
It is text, especially whenever he has that scene where he's heartbroken over the death of the twink guy.
Yeah, his little boyfriend.
Boyfriend, yeah.
Or husband. I don't know their status.
Yeah, who knows? You never know. But But yeah, that's the thing. That's there in the Road Warrior. Not there in this.
I like to think they're the same character.
They probably are, which is amazing, like, what he's able to survive.
Yeah.
Because he got, like, whenever he got hit by the truck, he, like, exploded.
Maybe he gets impaled by John Matrix, and then, like, they freeze him and bring him back to life later on. And
only for him to burst into pieces whenever he gets hit by a truck.
Yeah, yeah, there you go.
Why does Bennett fake his own death? Like, whose benefit is that for?
Oh, I think it's because they just need enough of a body count to get Kirby's attention, to get Kirby to reveal where Matrix is.
Yeah, because okay, like Matrix. So
if two of them die, it might be a coincidence, but if three of them die, then they have to lead. That's going to lead them to Matrix.
So apparently it was a team of four, I guess.
And
I don't know.
Apparently. Matrix lives off the grid, basically. Like he did what I think Jesse Ventura ended up doing for a little bit.
In real life.
I think he might have been inspired by this movie. I don't know. they're off the grid. They're out in the wilderness. And we get to see like all the fun things they do in that opening credit montage that looks like it's out of a romantic film.
Yeah. It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. I'm not reading romance there.
It's more lofty. It's not so much a romance between them, but it's like an easy family comedy movie credit sequence.
Almost like their best friends.
Action thriller sequence.
They're like their best friends. And then like later on, we see that she's written like she's supposed to be his wife because she makes him breakfast. And then they add like a few little things here and there where it's like, okay, yeah, this is supposed to be the daughter, but like, yeah, just like seeing him, like seeing her, like being the one making breakfast is like, now I think about it, it's like, well, in the montage in the opening credits, if Arnold's teaching her like how to defend herself, teaching her how to swim, and
I wanted to see her kung fu fight. By
me
the way,
me too. Yeah, when they're training and she's like doing the elbow jab, I was like, I don't remember if she kicks someone's ass later, but I hope so. And she does not, unfortunately.
No, she's got the great line to Dan Hedaya though about like,
not
you know,
really he's as nice and watching him smash your face in.
Yeah, which in she's the, hardcore in that.
That
moment.
Is hardcore, and actually in the director's cut, that moment is kind of ruined.
Oh.
Because remember when I was talking earlier on this podcast, on this episode, where there's a line change in the director's cut on Alyssa Milano's character, Jenny. It's that particular line, and the line is not nearly as nice as watching him kick your ass, which I don't think is quite as hard hitting as a smash your face in, because
it's
like,
very graphic.
Graphic. Like this is, well, it's a kid that's not using foul language. It's like, okay. Because the thing is, she's at the age where she has an imagination. It's like an imagining her, this mountain dad just smashing his face in. Like, and also it helps that line was actually delivered by Alyssa Milano on like the director's cut, where the line is clearly a dub because I think they lost the audio for it. It's an unnecessary change.
I would
tell you, listeners, of the two versions, definitely just watch the theatrical cut. Yeah, there's a little bit more like blood and gore during like the final half hour of the movie. And I wish that like that could be extracted and just fitted into the theatrical cut, because everything else that's added is just kind of unnecessary.
It's kind of like, I just reviewed the PG-13 Deadpool 2. And part of my review was just like, man, they have three cuts of this movie now. Take the best parts of all three and put them into one movie and I'll be happy.
I mean, I'm sure someone's probably doing that somewhere.
I hope so. Like, because all of them have things I like, but all of them are weaker because they don't have the other stuff.
Yeah.
So
see, I don't think I've seen one cut of Deadpool 2 yet.
I haven't seen any of them. That's why Joe reviewed it.
I
gotta get on that.
I was curious to check out the PG-13 one. It's fine. I want the Fred Savage scenes in the uncut, in the unedited, unrated version. That's what I wanted. Unrated version.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Then that'll be my Deadpool 2.
It could just be the Joe cut.
Okay. Well, the Joe cut. I'm going to get on that.
Yeah, get on the Joe cut. I want to see the Joe cut.
Tyler and I have talked about that a few times with different movies about how there are these different versions. Or like there's a movie that's really great, but it's like 30 minutes too long. And we've always toyed with like, how about we just do that? We just fix it. But, you know, there's only so much time in my life. I'm not going to fix other people's shit movies. You know what I mean?
It's one thing to talk about it for like a podcast. I think I came across a podcast that did that. They didn't edit it, but they would like talk about how they would fix movies, bad movies, but to actually go in and do it, that sounds like a ton of work.
Yep. No, thank you.
I mean, I just don't have that kind of time myself.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought about doing that for one movie, but then it got to a point where I was like, I'm just really not, I don't think I can make the time for it. I'd rather just, that I got busy making a short film.
Now you're making your own movies, and that's the way. That's what you should do instead.
Oh, yeah. I make my own short movies, and then I make my own work, and then I also talk about movies that I love, like Commando.
Back on topic. David Patrick Kelly. Can we talk about him for
Please,
a few minutes?
Let's talk about David Patrick Kelly. Sully. He's a funny guy.
Oh, so.
I like him. That's why he's going to kill him last.
Yeah, that's why he's going to kill him last. His suit is gigantic, looks super comfortable.
It's the opposite of Bennett. His outfit is too small, and on David Patrick Kelly, it's way too big.
They could have swapped costumes, and I think that'd have been fine.
One of my notes is that he looks like two little people sitting on each other's shoulders.
No, now I'm just picturing David Patrick Kelly wearing the Freddie Mercury outfit, like stalking Radon Chong through the airport, and then him being hung upside down by a wire attached to his leg.
Yeah, and then he's like, "You fucking whore," and then he starts tweaking his nipples through his fishnet. He says when he's in the bar with the guy selling like passports or whatever the hell, mm-hmm. he says, and this is like a restaurant and bar on like the third floor of a mall, and he says this used to be a great place for hunting slash.
Oh, I missed that
Ew.
Line.
That's disgusting.
Ew.
In a mar and like a mall mm-hmm. in a restaurant in a mall.
Yeah, it's a restaurant inside the Sherman Oaks Galleria. No
is
less.
That is that the same place as the Chopping Mall?
I believe it's the same place as Chopping Mall, and I know for sure it's the same place
Jingle All
as
the Way?
Terminator 2.
Terminator 2?
Yes. Mm.
Is it the same one as Jingle All the Way? Joe, can you?
I have
don't
no
remember.
Idea. I have no
I
idea.
I don't remember.
Didn't you make Jingle All the Way?
Yeah, but I didn't make any of these other movies, so I don't know.
Oh, okay. Okay. But I was thinking about how cool
Turbo
that
Man
is
for
too,
life.
Like, if you headcanon like Commando and Chopping Mall as being in the same world, that's cool.
Oh, totally.
Oh, I mean, Chopping Mall will have to come after Commando, of course. It's after he dies.
Because the mall is destroyed?
Long after Commando is dead, because Chopping Mall, at that point, there wouldn't be a movie. I mean,
when Commando's over, he's like, no more movies, ever.
Yeah.
None.
Well, or he just killed the shit out of all those robots, and he could take a frag from a fragment of a grenade to like his side, and then just basically treat it as a reason to take his vest off.
Also, Chopping Mall has like a sort of, you could kind of read it as kind of in slightly critical of capitalism kind of a deal, right? Whereas they make, I'm just kind of, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas in Commando, they make a big deal out of him not being a commie, right? So like, so these two things, they couldn't collide, because they made, like, there's one, no homo, two, no commie.
I feel like, though, movies in the 80s use commie when they don't refer to like economics or anything. It's just like a commie is a fascist dictator, and it's like, so it's not anything to
usually
do
like a person of color
understanding what communism is,
a person in color or a person with a really bad tan job like Dan Hedaya in this movie.
Dan Hedaya
from
who is
Belleville
so
Day.
His accent is weird to me. I know what Dan Hedaya sounds like, and when he's speaking in Commando, it weirds me out. He speaks so slowly mm-hmm. as though he's trying not to mess up his accent.
Yeah.
Like, he's practiced these lines twice, and he's like, oh, God, say it slow. Don't mess it up, you know?
Yeah, and sometimes,
and he says, Vasquez or something, like he's whatever the president's name is.
It's sometimes it's hard to tell, because sometimes he's really quiet with his lines a lot of the time. Like,
yeah.
I find myself having to turn up the volume a lot when half the time that he's speaking.
Yeah.
So, like, I wonder if he's like just like self-conscious about like his dialect work as he's acting.
I don't know. It's very strange. We lost track of David Patrick Kelly, though.
As we are wont to do.
Yeah.
Every quote unquote.
We promised we would kill him last.
Yeah,
that is true.
We're
we did promise to
we
kill
are
him
really
last,
saving
unlike,
him for last.
Like Matrix, who lied?
I lied.
and then
when she's like, "What happened to Sully?" and he goes,
"I let him go."
That's a good one.
That is a good one. And actually, speaking of that moment, I noticed when the car is tipped over on its side after that chase, and then of course Radon Chong's car is just trashed into this light pole, which should have killed the two of them, but they're fine.
Not in this world, no.
No.
Flesh wound.
I mean, Arnold is there, and nothing could kill him, so she was going to be fine. Even though she was sitting in the side where there would have been a car seat, but he ripped that out, and of course, no seatbelt.
Is in a way,
you see the dummy like violently hit the dashboard too.
In a way, this is like, I don't know, when you look at like Last Action Hero, Last Action Hero is supposed to be like this amplification of everything action genre.
Yes.
But I don't think Last Action Hero's film world is as like balls to the wall insane as Commando is.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's
making fun of this movie more than anything else.
But it doesn't. But it can't get to that level of Commando.
Because I think it recognizes that even trying to do this would be like too much.
Yeah. It's almost like the only Last Action Hero would have had to have been Hot Shots Part 2 or whatever.
And the thing is, it's ironic because like Last Action Hero, that was John McTiernan, right?
Yeah.
So he did that and he did Predator, which Predator was after Commando, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's interesting because, like, well, of course, I mean, Predator, I mean, that's a quality film in every sense.
And in that, Bill Duke is on his team.
And Bill Duke's got some great moments. Actually, I mean, Predator as a whole is just a great film.
There's nary a bad moment in Predator.
Agreed.
Yeah, especially I rewatched it when the new one came out. I liked it. I remember liking it quite a bit.
I think Predator is one of those movies that just like it really bends the genres rather beautifully. And the tone change is not so drastic. Like when it goes from pure action manly film to basically a slasher film where all these manly masculine men are just cut down.
Rad. God, that's rad.
Yeah. And one of the best movie monsters of all time.
And apparently like while they were making the movie, now we're talking about Predator. While they were making Predator, to the whole machismo thing that defines Commando, right? Like this machismo, like so defined Schwarzenegger and all his work that when they went on to do Predator, all the guys who were in Predator, rather than like partying or hanging out or doing anything when they weren't shooting, they were all lifting weights constantly to try to like each other.
Oh yeah, because I mean at this point, like Arnold Schwarzenegger could have bench pressed, I think, 450 pounds.
And he would, I guess, spread rumors about like he would have people say that he bench pressed way more than he actually did to get his co-stars to like work even harder.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cause the thing is, like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger on all of his movies, especially during that time, he was working out every single day when he was not shooting. So
as if you couldn't tell, the guy's a monster.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, he literally is a monster. That's why he's the Terminator. And I'll say, like, in terms of Arnold Schwarzenegger's limitations as an actor, I honestly can't see anyone as the Terminator. And I also cannot see anybody as, of course, John Matrix of Commando.
I was watching this today. I was bemused by his superpowers of like his superhuman strength and resilience and ripping cars apart.
He can smell people from a mile away.
That's right. He smells people from a mile away.
he smells men coming.
Yes.
I was buying into it so much that
Matrix cruising too? Was he like a cruising buddy of Bennett's before Bennett started cruising for him? And that's why he had to get out and start a family?
Could be.
If he's smelling men, I mean, it's there. It's there.
I don't know.
But yeah, in terms of superhuman strength, I mean, he at one point in the brawl in the Galleria does the following things. He rips a telephone booth out with a person.
Oh, that's so good.
And flips it and throws it.
It's David Patrick Kelly, though, who's like half his own size. So,
yeah,
you know.
So I think more effort was on the telephone booth. He was just like an additional like, okay, this is just like the cherry on top.
He does have a gun, though. He just has to point and click.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. While he's firing and clicking. But I mean, he's just so terrified at that point because he's trapped in this telephone booth. The whole thing is shaking. Glass is falling all over. And Arnold's just like. And then at one point, there are 8 or 9 security guards piled all on top of him. But then when the shot pulls back in the next edit, he does like a Hulk rage, just shakes all of them off. They all go flying off. And at one point, in the Galleria scene, there are these like weird balloon or like inflatable.
Yeah, those are strange.
Like, I don't know what you would call those, but they're shaped like pipes, but they're all balloons. And so then he tears one, wraps it up, and then swings like Tarzan onto the elevator. And that's actually him doing that stunt. There's only one stunt in the whole movie that he doesn't actually do, which makes sense because it's after all that is done, he gets hit by Sully in his Porsche. And he goes like flying off of the front of the car, and then he stands up and just like just keeps on running like it was nothing, therefore hinting at another superpower of his by having a stuntman knowing exactly when to time that hit.
Yeah, I couldn't believe when he got hit by the car just didn't bounce off of him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Or like this car just like stopped dead and then Sully goes flying out.
Yeah, he hits Arnold and he goes flying through the windshield like he hit a wall.
We'll probably see that in the
remake.
I mean,
that's more of like one of those things though, where if that did happen, then he wouldn't have needed, you know, because like all of the things had to fall in place so that he could have Radon Chong with him, you know. So like,
oh yeah, like, and the thing is, like, he basically like abducts her.
She's fine with it though. She's totally cool with it.
It destroys her car, but then afterwards she decides that she's going to go with him, to go along and help him go find his daughter, who she's never met before.
Severe Stockholm syndrome.
It's a weird turn because she sticks with him after the mall because she understands that he's in the right and, you know, he's not going to kill her or hurt her. But he also has her car, so she's going to stick with her car. Cut to, you know, they kill Sully and her car is there and he takes Sully's car and she still goes with him. It's like, your car, you're leaving your car that was so important to you like 4 seconds ago.
Yeah, that was a car that was important to you. And not to mention, he trashed it. And then whenever he whenever he takes the Porsche, I mean, he pushes it now because it's on the side. And then they take her in the car. What happened to Sully? I let him go. They drive off. And also the Porsche is totally fine afterwards. Could you see, like, the visible damage on the
Porsche? I think
Porsche?
It's one of those things. There's, like, the, you know, there's the whole movement right now of the, if something doesn't bring you joy, get rid of it. You know, look at all your belongings and ask yourself, does this bring me joy? And if it doesn't, you get rid of it. I think once the car's trashed, she's like, this doesn't bring me joy anymore.
Okay.
So she just moves on with her life. But
Arnold's muscles bring me joy, so I will stick with that.
Yeah, she sees the glistening, you know, the street lamps glistening off of his muscles.
Not to mention, as soon as they start driving the Porsche, I mean, it looks brand new. Despite it being, like, in a car chase, it flipped on its side.
The one side got real wrecked, and the other side's totally fine. It's got the one nice profile.
After that, the car is completely fine. In the movie, after they drive off, their car is completely fine.
See, there's a good chunk there, and I'll say the one, if the movie has any weakness, it's that there's a good 15 minutes there in that second half hour of the movie where he's just going from like person to person, killing them, getting the next clue, that I find kind of like a little dull.
I do agree there's about like 15 minutes, like him going from killing Sully to killing Bill Duke, or Cook, excuse me, in the hotel. And all the wild things that happen in there, we'll get to that in a second. For me, like, the slow stuff is them sneaking their way into that surplus, to get the weapons. Like, I think you could have trimmed.
That's fine. You could have montaged that.
I think you could have montaged all that. And really, like, if you cut it there, because like I wouldn't want to change anything in the hotel scene, in particular the fight.
Oh, the Bill Duke fight is awesome.
The Bill Duke fight is awesome. Radon Chong's dialogue is incredible. With the, you know, I can't believe this macho bullshit. These guys eat too much red meat. Like, I don't know if this is intentional, but there's like a self-awareness there. Like, cause I mean, I can't believe this macho bullshit. Can you, Joe?
I could not believe it as it was happening. I did like when she was not flirting with Cook, but like she was playing the girl that Sully was hooking up with.
Yeah. Yeah.
I liked, she dove right into that. She just adapts very well. I didn't find that section of the movie so much dull as like Taken levels of irresponsible
it's super gross.
He keeps killing people without knowing what they know to find his daughter. So he just happens into these clues.
Yeah.
It's weird that he,
the clues. Yeah, that's
so
right. Yeah.
Flippant
about it.
Yeah,
the clues do happen. Yeah, the clues do happen by accident, like because he happens to find the hotel key on Sully before he just drops him.
And there's this obscure fuel receipt in Cook's glove compartment. It's like, well, check that out. They got super lucky that it actually leads to an island.
Yeah, no, exactly. Because that's the point in the movie where Radon Chong goes, oh, yeah, I'm a pilot and stuff, by the way. That's going to be really useful in about 10 minutes in the movie.
Gentlemen, just got to ask this. Are you suggesting that the movie's dumb?
Not dumb. Would never say dumb because this movie will punch me in the face.
Not
it just
about a
there
Mark
are
Lester
things
film.
That are a bit of a stretch.
Oh, you ain't kidding. I mean, the thing is, like, going back to the hotel scene, like, the thing that, like, watching it just makes me kind of step back and go, whoa, is whenever when Arnold just straight up, like, rips open her shirt, just like, you gotta do this sort of thing. Just, like, rips open her shirt, just, like, exposing the cleavage. Excuse me. Oh, God, I'm about to pass gas just thinking about that scene. Just thinking about that moment, because it's so bad. But it's like that unwanted, like a borderline harassment type of thing. But obviously, like at this point, she's willing to go and help him out. This total stranger who completely hijacked her life and trashed her car. It's like, sure, rip open my shirt. Why not?
I do like that Ray Don Chong does stuff.
And I also like that she absolutely is not a love interest in this movie.
Yeah, there's maybe an implication that she's going to be, but his priority is his daughter for this story, for sure. Yeah,
and then she's basically becomes Robin at one point.
So. Yeah. She's very capable. She can fly. She's figuring it out. She plays the character in the hotel room. It's like she does things. And maybe it's because I'm watching so many Bond movies right now and all the Bond girls are completely useless. But it's a refreshing change to have her be part of the process.
When she fires the rockets, like that's amazing.
Yes, love that.
Especially when she does the first one by mistake because she was pointed the wrong direction.
I love, I love when she. He asks her, "How did you know? How did you learn how to do that?" He's like, "I read the instructions." And my note was like, "Were the instructions really vague about which end is the front?" Because it seems like that would be the first instruction.
Yeah, it's like this would be the front direction. This would be the back. Yeah, absolutely.
There's probably arrows on the thing.
I like that at the end of the movie, it's not so much that, again, they're love interests or anything, but instead it's more like she's just good in his book. So I think you get a hint at the end that, I don't know, maybe she could be a part of their life more. Love interest, who knows, who cares? It's just like, he's like, I'm okay with you. I like you. You're one of the few people in the world I'm not going to kill.
Yeah, you know? I live on a mountain with only my daughter and no human contact, but I'll give you my address. Like, we can.
You want to get an ice cream?
Yeah, you want to get an ice cream with me and my daughter? Be careful. If she offers you a bite of ice cream, do not fall for that shit. She's a little fucker.
Yeah, and over here is where all the doe run.
I was going to say, this is where we feed the deer.
Yep.
Yeah.
And if you want to, I can teach you how to swim in my pool or something.
Do you think, like, at his place, he just, like, opens up the window and, like, does kind of, like, a Snow White, like, la, 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 and, like, all the birds come in and, like, start doing his, like, dishes and
stuff? It would be very fitting in the opening credit sequence. Oh, I kind of wish that was in there now.
I think that could work.
Over, like, Steve and Ida Souza's credit, the screenwriter for this.
Yeah.
Well, Joel Silver's.
The story was done by D'Souza and also the writers of Teen Wolf.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So, cool. From the people who brought you Die Hard and Teen Wolf
comes That Commando. Sounds about right. That sounds perfect.
And Roller Boogie.
And Street Fighter. Mark. Speaking of Street Fighter.
And the producer of Executive Decision.
Ooh, Raul Julia was originally going to be Dan Hedaya's character.
Oh, that makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. Oh, and did you notice, too, there's like, because D'Souza wrote this and made Street Fighter, and there's the scene in Street Fighter where Ryu's got Vega's face and he's like pushing it up against like the burning whatever the hell hole in the wall. There's just like a hole with fire in it.
Yes
just like in Commando.
In a Commando, and that's when that's after the I'm gonna kill you now come in my hole. Pants type of thing where it's basically a sex fight scene.
D'Souza likes like holes in the wall with fire in them.
He's part of a fight scene. Yeah. And he
boiler
likes
rooms,
and he likes it when the men have their shirts off too, or at least like they're.
We all
they're,
do.
Who doesn't?
We all do.
Oh yeah, especially if your tits could jiggle like Arnold's when he's rowing that inflatable raft and he's wearing nothing but a Speedo. Oh my God!
And I got Vernon Wells in his costume like a sausage.
The whole time watching this movie, it was like I had morning wood.
Vernon Wells is an intense dude, though.
Yeah, he is.
I was telling Tyler before we sat down here with you, Joe, that I met Vernon Wells actually, who plays Bennett.
Oh, yeah. That's amazing.
Al and I both did. And Al was amazed by him because he had been in Power Rangers. Vernon Wells plays, I don't remember what season it is, but he actually kills the Red Ranger in one of the seasons.
Whoa. That's cool.
And so Al got a signed picture of Vernon Wells, like with the Red Ranger, like about to kill him. It's super rad.
That's awesome.
But he's intense. Like as a person, I don't know. You meet some people and like a lot of, filmmakers or actors or whatever, you meet them and you're like, oh, they're really cool, down to earth kind of people. Mm-hmm. Nothing super intense about them. I don't know. Maybe it's just Vernon Wells' reputation, or maybe he just is that intense. But he, like, when I met him, man, he was like,
he's actor man.
Like, he really felt intense to me. Yeah, like, I don't know.
He's actor man, basically. Hmm. And speaking of the furnace hole in the wall scene, I noticed another thing revisiting this movie, because I was able to watch it and have the audio up. When they're getting into the head into the furnace competition, and then they're making those amazing faces, like Vernon Wells is baring all of his teeth.
Yeah.
At one point, you hear one of the two go switch during their grunting.
Oh, really?
And then they turn, and then of course that's when they also make the switch.
They're calling their cues
basically.
That's funny.
They're trying to work that into their grunts, but then I watched this, I was like, wait, that sounded like a word.
Oh, I'll have to watch that again.
Switch over, and then going back, playing it again. One of them, and I think it might have been Vernon Wells or Arnold, because I mean Arnold was really all about safety and very protective. Even Alyssa Milano talked about how protective he was of her, and also helped her with her algebra during the making of the movie, which that's amazing. That's cool. That's awesome. Yeah, apparently the two of them, I guess, are still on really good terms to this day, which that just warms my heart. But yeah, during that fight, one of them goes switch during the middle of it, and that's of course before the great "You're a dead man, John!" Bullshit. And then Bennett is going to shoot Arnold, not between the eyes, but between the balls. And then
rips
that pipe off, throws it through him, impales him, and then of course he's billowing out very white steam, which of course I can't help but to think, oh, this is symbolism for him getting off as he's dying, which is always what he's wanted.
It always bothered me, the steam pipe, but it goes all the way through him and into a water broiler behind him, and that's where the steam is coming from. I always thought the steam was coming from him. I was like, that's dumb.
He's full of hot air.
When you work in that kind of visual symbolism, there has to be some sort of logic to it, I guess. So, yeah, it going through him and hitting the cauldron behind him that's billowing out all this steam. Okay, sure, I can work with that. Although it's weird that in the close-up of the pipe actually hitting him, whenever he sags down, the pipe is also moving with him. But if it's gone through him and hit the...
it might have a bit more stability to it. I see what you're saying. Yeah. I like the moment when he throws Bennett off of him, and Bennett gets full-on electrocuted for what is easily an amount of time that would kill a bad guy in any other movie.
But
and
he supercharges
him. He runs it off. He's just like, bleh! And then he's like right back in the fight.
Well, the thing, not only that, but he just lays blow after blow on John Matrix.
So cool.
That's where he's at his lowest point, John Matrix. But he just goes, bullshit. And then through rapid editing, it's one after probably.
That's how I deal with life, man. I get down and I just scream, bullshit.
You could land 10 good punches in less than a second. And that's not even getting into the what had to have been 95% of the 102 confirmed kills that Matrix has in this movie on the island. And of those kills, I would say a good 75% of them have mustaches.
Or fake mustaches.
Or fake mustaches. One of the two. And one
folliculophobia.
And 1%
mustaches.
I mean, a mustache alone, unless you're Tom Selleck, don't ever do it.
Well, I mean, Bennett gets away with it, I guess, because he's evil.
Wells is an exception, yes.
Vernon Wells, I mean, what are you going to do? You're going to tell Vernon Wells to shave off his mustache? He will destroy you.
Yeah, he will.
He's a very big man.
I mean, he went toe-to-toe with Arnold Schwarzenegger with no fear. Even Arnold Schwarzenegger's quote is saying, oh, Vernon Wells, this guy, he could be really scary when you call action, but otherwise he's really nice. But acting offside, even he was intimidated by him, which is amazing to think about. But yeah, a number of them have either mustaches or painted on mustaches. And then one of the kills is a guy with a cigar that never drops from his mouth. Anytime you see him, he's a guy when you go inside of the house, which I think is the same mansion from Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Which, oddly enough, is another movie where the damsel is named Jenny. So that's just a weird coincidence.
Beverly Hills Commando?
I mean, Axel Foley, John Matrix thing would be pretty wild.
Somewhere, especially, somehow.
Actually, another thing that's... Actually, this is also wild, too. Originally, John Matrix was going to be played by Nick Nolte. So when you say Beverly Hills Commando, Hills Commando in 48 Hours.
Down and out in Beverly Hills Commando.
God, this is just a great big 80s movie hard-on, isn't it?
Oh, it totally is.
It's 9 feet of wood. on Arnold Schwarzenegger's shoulder.
Oh, this movie is basically like the most testosterone-fueled, masculine, closeted gay man. That's what this movie is.
I mean, I think Expendables probably tops it. I think it was until a few years ago.
No. Expendables is not worthy of being Commando's jockstrap.
No, I agree. Sorry to say. But it's much more blatantly homoerotic testosterone manliness.
And blatantly obvious that, oh, you guys are trying, you just can't do it anymore. Oh, that's so sad. All the computers in the world can't fix this dumb movie. Yeah, I mean, well, Commando's dumb, but the thing is, it's not a bad dumb movie. And just like the unintentional subtext, because I think at the end of the day, that's what it is. It's unintentional subtext that really just makes it stand out. Because I've been able to show this to a number of people now throughout my life. Because when I first saw this, I was about like 6 or 7. It's a dad movie. It was one of those movies that my dad showed to me. And of course, the part that I remember the most was, like you were talking about, the last half hour where he's on the island, he's suiting up. I mean, he's gearing up for America. And he goes and he Americas the fuck out of Valverde.
He's the most American... I mean, German.
Ronald Reagan would have weeped.
Because he says, he talks scene. About Germany in the beginning of the movie. Mm. I mean, I know he's not, like, Schwarzenegger's not German. But
technically Austrian.
But John Matrix is apparently maybe German?
Yeah, John Matrix is from Germany. And then, he did a number of missions throughout the world and missed out on so many of Jenny's important life moments.
And she's not even that old, so I don't even know.
Yeah. I mean, apparently old enough to be taking algebra at the time. I mean, good on her.
What do you guys think was in that sandwich? Because he can't identify it. He doesn't seem to mind it, but it's weird.
Yeah, because...
pure estrogen.
I was just like the thinking... absent mother's estrogen pills.
Well, whatever it was that she made, it couldn't have been as bad as... Because we just did an episode of Cinemuck on this movie, Jack Frost, which I believe the listeners can hear.
Oh, yeah.
Where the main...
The protagonist... Available publicly. Yeah, you're right.
Where the protagonist's son was making brownies for him and used antifreeze. With antifreeze.
Yeah, so. Maybe this is antifreeze.
Or like the equivalent of that. Like, what is something that you would not...
That's why he's so hot the whole movie. That's why
just cook those eggs with pure gasoline.
That's why he's like constantly leaking. He's actually dying of like antifreeze poisoning the whole movie.
That's why there's no chance for a sequel.
Yeah, no chance.
This was the last time.
It also explains why his cognitive abilities are not at top notch, because everything he does endangers his daughter's life.
Oh, and also just endangering to him, especially when he's jumping off the plane after he rather conspicuously
ridiculous.
Kills the guy next to him.
When he jumps off the freaking landing gear.
Yeah, he jumps off the landing gear. It's done in 3 shots. There's one of him going off the wheel of the plane, and then there's a far away, what I think was this like kind of a similar effect that I've seen in other movies, like the opening shot of Batman where he's on top of that roof and he's overlooking the robbery happening and it looks like it's animation.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It looks like it's drawn. That's sort of what's happening here in this far away shot of this person falling from the plane. And then we cut to the swamp area where it's, I think he probably fell no more than 15 feet and makes a very small splash.
I know. Yeah. Cause I was going to say, it's like when he's on the landing gear, he's like 150 feet in the air. Right. And then like
at the very least,
and then yeah, at minimum, and he leaps off this thing. And when he hits the water and then comes out, he's not even wet, like above the nipples. Like he's barely like damp from jumping into this swamp.
I love that. He's like holding his coattails up so they don't get wet. Like it's a skirt.
Yeah.
That was funny to me.
No, that moment when... God, and I don't remember seeing that moment when I saw the movie as a kid, like whatever parts I saw on TV as a kid. But I don't know. Who did I watch this with? I guess maybe Steve or Ken or whatever. I watched it for the first time end to end with. And when he leapt off the landing gear, I was like, oh my God. Okay, I see what this movie's up to. This is... all kinds of dumb. I love this.
Oh, it knows it. Yeah, and it knows exactly what it is. And I've shown this to... See, I watched it with my dad. I've shown it to a number of friends in college. I've probably shown this to at least, I think, 20 people at one point in time. And a lot of them were just like people who I had met. I was visiting a friend's apartment, and we went up to their attic, and I was bringing it to him for him to watch, and it ended up becoming a party movie, and Commando is a great party movie. I've shown this to...
I mean, it's Mark Lester, man. In my mind, you can't go wrong with a Mark Lester movie, I mean,
This is a Showdown Little Tokyo, right? He also did that.
Yeah, he
did
Showdown Little Tokyo. He did Firestarter.
You have the biggest dick I've ever seen in a man. Thanks.
I mean, he did Firestarter. He did Class of 1984. He did Roller Boogie, which is one of my absolute favorite movies of all time. I am not ashamed to say.
I'm also not ashamed to say Commando is one of my favorite movies.
Oh, my God. Commando's amazing.
That is because Commando is really one of the funniest action movies I think I've ever seen.
Oh, he made Truck Stop. Oh, I knew he made Truck Stop Women. Oh, he made Armed and Dangerous. That I did not know.
Oh, I didn't know that either. Also, I don't think I've seen Armed and Dangerous.
I did as a kid.
I haven't seen Commando since, like, high school. And I remember that time being a little disappointed by it because I couldn't understand why he was dropping all these lame puns throughout the movie. I was like, could you take this a little bit more seriously? And then watching it today, I was like, oh no, he's just really upset. He's just like coping with his daughter's probably going to die. So he has all these shitty joke lines.
Like when I'm at a funeral or something, like anything bad happens in my life, I joke about it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
He makes one liners.
Are you guys suggesting this movie's dumb?
No. I would never do that. I would never do that, Tyler.
Not to Mark Lester.
No, nor with Mark Lester.
Arnold needs this. He needs our podcast.
Without this, I mean, what's he gonna have in life? You know? Was he going to just cry himself to sleep with all those Mr. Universe titles or something? I don't know.
Just his disappointing son and... Yeah.
His alimony for his divorce.
Yeah, yeah. Just disappointment and alimony. Arnold's life these days.
I wouldn't know. But I do like his videos that I catch on sometimes on Facebook of him about climate change. It's like, all right, you know what's up with the world. You care. Good.
He's doing all right these days.
Yeah, he's doing all right.
He's got a better haircut than he did in Commando.
And he hasn't been like a total disappointment as a human being. Because I've been constantly let down by like celebrities and people who have been like influential in pop culture.
I was going to say, not just celebrities, but people in life. Joe, you notice that? The older you get, the more people suck.
I have noticed that.
But this movie doesn't. And neither does Arnold Schwarzenegger. And God bless. Or Mark Lester and even Steven D'Souza. Because, I mean, they gave us Commando.
Fighter.
It's glorious.
Roller Boogie.
I feel like I was
this is just
something.
A segue into our episode on Roller Boogie that we're about to record.
I haven't seen Roller Boogie. No, I was wondering, because I didn't notice it this time, and it bothered me. Like, why does the former president guy think that killing the current president is going to make him president again?
Let me answer it this way, Joe. I don't know anything about the story that's going on with Dan Hedaya in this movie. You're asking questions about what Dan Hedaya is up to here.
I didn't even know that was what he said for 20 years of my life.
No idea. Okay, exactly, right?
Yeah.
I've seen this movie a bunch of times. I watched it recently, and today I was surprised by the plot.
I was surprised because I actually thought to turn on the subtitles this time when I watched it in preparation for this, because I never understood what it was that he was saying.
I mean, the whole thing, because I was marveling over it today, like all of that stuff that Dan Hedaya says is just the thinnest pretense to get John Matrix to kill 100 people. And that's it. I mean,
exactly.
it's no depth. He doesn't, in any other movie, here's what would happen, right? John Matrix would get off the plane. He would be in whatever it's called, Valverde. But some people call it Valverde, which I think is funnier. So
probably in other movies.
Yeah. no, I think Vernon Wells of Valverde. But he would get off the plane. He would go meet the president and he'd be like, listen, I'm supposed to kill you. He's got my daughter. And the president would be like, oh, shit. Here's a crew of elite task force from Valverde to help you, right? The movie would be a half hour longer because it would have a whole subplot where he actually goes there and enlists the help. And then they go in as a task force and they get picked off one by one, right? And they got a demolitions expert and they've got like an archer and they've got somebody who uses knives or whatever.
That would make for a really sinister villain.
And they've got,
You got yourself a really sinister villain, yeah.
Problem, John Matrix just doesn't do that. He just doesn't show up to Valverde at all. It doesn't matter. Like, Dan Hedaya could be like, we kidnapped your daughter and we want you to go to Six Flags and pick up one of those, like, 3 foot tall cups they have there for us. And it would just, it would have as much to do with the story as this whole President of Valverde thing does.
Yeah, because the thing is, you never see him.
No, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter at all. Like, it's
we're off the plane in Valverde for
the most
total
important
of 30
thing
seconds.
Is that these terrorists are basically getting together to commit a ritual suicide by kidnapping Arnold Schwarzenegger's daughter.
Yeah, yeah. They've got a death wish.
And their wish is fulfilled. And it is beautiful.
So to your point, Joe, no idea.
Right.
All right. I didn't know if it was in the movie and I missed it.
No, that whole thing literally has nothing to do with anything.
It's what we call filler.
It's you gotta have a plot, right? Like, you gotta tell your audience, here's why this thing is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're gonna forget in the next scene.
And who cares? In this movie, who cares?
Here's something I noticed watching it this time. The plane takes off in broad daylight. And then by the time they get to the mall, it's night. And then on the island, it's broad daylight again. That's a long ass 11 hours.
Yeah, because that's to indicate that, like, I guess he's dropping off, like, right before we go into, like, sunsetting time.
I guess if this was, like, the summer solstice, it might work out okay, but it struck me as odd.
I guess, like, depending on which direction the plane is going, I don't know where this Valverde is, so...
Yeah. I'm led to assume that Valverde is in, like, South America.
That's what it seems like.
Yeah.
But the island's only a couple hours away from Miami or something, right? Is it Miami?
I have no idea.
It's a couple hours away from wherever they are.
I don't know where they are to begin with.
They're leaving from L.A. Yeah,
they're in Middle Earth.
It's Narnia.
It starts off in the Shire. And... yeah. Break out the maps. Let's go.
See, I'm trying to think if I have any questions about this movie.
Joe's always got really specific logic questions, like what? How does
I mean,
this
those
make
are those are
sense?
Good questions to ask. By
I don't.
All means.
I don't think about that stuff. I just marvel over how little it means.
This one could be interesting. When they steal the amphibious plane, there's a couple of guys unloading on them with machine guns, but they don't seem to hit the plane once.
No, they don't.
So my question is, are they like just using blanks and they want them to take the plane? And what possible reason could they have for that?
They actually do hit the plane, but not for about 80% of that scene.
I mean, they
it's
really
right
suck
before
at shooting and driving at the same
yeah,
time.
Yeah, it's right before he kills them. Mm-hmm. Suddenly there's like 20 bullet holes around the door.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, and so they, and it's, then, but it's right before.
Yeah, and then afterwards, because they can't get the canoe with wings started, which is how she calls it, he goes up to the console and just beats it.
Yeah, he hits it.
He's like, come on, you bitch, fly or die. And then, like, and then of course, the,
yeah, he
the propeller
it,
starts.
The
propeller. Exactly. The propeller starts going. Looks every time. Like, he just beats it like an old video game console.
The guy who's who's on the left side of the car there, which would be our driver's side. I don't remember where the steering wheel was on the car that's going after the plane. The guy who's on our driver's side of the car when the Jeep goes off the dock after John Matrix finally shoots it. Neither of them shoot each other for like 3 straight minutes. And when Matrix finally shoots them and the Jeep goes off the side of the dock, the guy who jumps out of the driver's seat hits the dock, like the corner of the dock, full force with his chest.
Yeah.
Like it. Oh, my God. I was like, oh, I hope that guy was OK.
Yeah. It's,
like
oh
it
God,
looks
yeah.
bad.
Yeah.
Like he could have broken his sternum.
I mean, not
plan.
Bad. It's not bad enough that the character is like, supposed to get shot. But like when he's falling,
the
like,
actual stunt man like
died,
you know. Broke his like sternum into like exploded into his lungs or something.
Oh my
you
god!
Know?
Yeah, I mean, that looks like some of that Mortal Kombat 11 footage I was just watching on Thursday because I was watching some of that on Thursday at work because it was pretty slow at this point. So I pulled up my phone because you have to be discreet about Mortal Kombat, and that looks yeah. What happened to him is looks like something I probably would see it. Just like imagining the X-ray of like his sternum just caving into.
Are you watching Mortal Kombat footage at work? No, it's porn. I swear.
Yeah, speaking of Mortal Kombat, the shed scene,
yes.
All kinds of things
when
happen
when
there.
When he throws the saw blades and everything.
And just like
yeah.
scalps one person.
I was,
like, just basically
like, The scalping might be my favorite kill in the movie, where he throws the saw blade like a ninja star and scalps someone.
Shaves off this dude's hairline.
It's so good.
And also, one other kill that I really like is when he grabs one of the guys by the arm and then severs the arm with the machete.
That's great.
And in this shot, too, the guy whose arm is severed, he's instantly like, I think, touching at the stump a little bit. And I don't know if that's like to get the blood coming out
I think you've got the director's cut where he starts like fingering the stump holes.
Yeah, exactly. That's what he's doing. Yeah, he's fingering
the stump holes. Why does this arouse me? Why am I turned on by this?
Bennett's over there going, I trained him well.
Finger your stump hole. Crikey.
What was up with the guy when Bennett and the president are talking? One of the guys says that slitting the little girl's throat would be like warm butter. And Bennett's like, what the fuck is up with your guys? They're so weird. He's like,
yeah, he's like, I like the way that they talk tough. They're so stupid. They make me laugh.
Yeah, exactly. That's what that is. Yeah. And the thing is, like, good on him, because like one guy like randomly say that, it's like, what are you, fucking psycho or something?
Well, Sully says earlier in the movie that like they're gonna have more time with his daughter. Weird and gross and rapey.
Well, yeah, because he gives Matrix some money to get some booze on the plane ride.
Yeah,
he just relax a little bit because they will have a little more time with their daughter. And then he's chuckling. And then the guy with him who gets his neck broken in the passenger seat of the plane is laughing too. And then that's when Arnold goes, "You're a funny guy, Sully. I like you.
Yeah.
That's why I'm going to kill you last." but really, him killing Sully first. Well, technically second.
Second.
It
would have been better if he killed him first. Like, you know.
I mean, because obviously. He really is just like the worst scum in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, that's the one kill. It's like, yeah, fuck.
But
that
it's
guy.
Also kind of, I think it's also kind of a bummer when Sully does get killed, because. Maybe it's just for me, because I'm a big David Patrick Kelly fan. I think he's fantastic.
Oh, he's a wonderful actor.
Everything. I think him being gone is like, oh, no more of him, I guess.
Because that's the thing, he's an incredibly talented actor.
And then like for me, it's just biding my time until Matrix is on the island.
I don't know. I love that hotel fight.
Bill Duke's great.
The hotel fight, and also Radon Chong with the bazooka. Blowing and basically just like knocking over that police truck, like actually hitting probably directly where Arnold is sitting.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure that just like fuels him.
I was gonna say, like, he absorbed it. That's how he goes into the climax.
That's the hidden superpower that they either couldn't show because they didn't have the money for it, or just didn't think of.
Like, he absorbs kinetic energy or whatever.
X-Men First Class style.
Because okay. I noticed it definitely hits the side of the van where the guy who goes, "Hey, hooker," is sitting. Fuck that guy.
Hooker.
It's completely unnecessary, but just so funny. It's
very bizarre.
Him and his partner were talking about how being a cop used to be such a great way to hunt Slash.
Yeah. Used to go down to that restaurant and bar on the third floor of the mall next to the KB Toys. That was the best Slash hunting grounds you ever seen.
Oh, well, I mean, especially the way David Patrick Kelly talks about Jenny.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, actually, the more we're talking about it, like, although there are so much in this movie that makes no sense, like, there's so much weird stuff that I'm picking up from it. And I don't know if it's because I've seen it so many times or because of just, like, how bizarre some of the
execution
is.
Bennett has trained you well.
But I guess so.
Bill Paxton shows up. We didn't mention that.
Yes. Yeah.
We
lost him, sir.
That scene should have been cut. Like, there's no point to that scene.
No.
It's just, hi, Bill Paxton.
It's just to pad it out to 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. There really is no point to that scene. I'm glad that there's a gratuitous Bill Paxton scene there.
Yes.
But it has no point being in the movie.
Yeah. I was pretty thrilled to see him show up. And maybe it just demonstrates that she can fly low enough to hide under radar. I guess
that's all that is.
There's no point to it.
But no, whenever I saw that scene, it just reminded me that last year at the Music Box, I got to see One False Move for the very first time. Have any of you guys seen that movie?
No,
no.
Check it out. It's a Carl Franklin movie that he did before The Devil in the Blue Dress. Yeah, and it's Bill Paxton and Billy Bob Thornton, who also wrote the script for it. It's a really, really good neo-noir film that I don't think has been seen enough, and I don't think has been praised enough. And I was recommended that by Matt Weinstein, and actually one of the best things about it is Bill Paxton. Like, I think it's some of the best work I've ever seen him do as an actor. If you love Bill Paxton, check out One False Move if you can. So, and that's the most that I got from Bill Paxton's appearance.
There's Tyler's recommendation. So
yeah. A little early, but it fits.
Let's plug. Let's plug our Twitters. Yes.
well, I mean, sure. It's just like watching it recently, that Bill Paxton scene, all I was thinking about was, oh, yeah, I just watched this not too long ago. That was really great.
It just made me sad to see Bill Paxton. And then I was like, yay. And then I was like, oh, no.
Because he's no longer with us.
That's really the biggest bummer. Mm-hmm. Man, he was so wonderful.
No, he will be missed. Yeah, I'm still not over his passing.
R.I.P.
But other than that, yeah, he appears now in Commando to make you feel sad.
Yeah, that's why he took the job. He was like, you know, one day after I die, some assholes in a basement in Chicago are going to be bummed out watching Commando.
Bill, could you stop talking about after you die and people watching your movies in the future? It's really weird. It's bumming me out.
And boy, was he right.
This is my legacy, guys.
It's not the career that he's made. It's just one day.
How many people he'll make sad.
Sending the three most pathetic losers.
See, I've got the opposite goal. I'm sure so many people are going to be just cheering when I'm gone, you know? And when they think about me, they'll be like, I'm glad that guy's dead. Fuck him.
I think that's the case with everybody, though.
I mean, I will if that's what you really want. If those are your last wishes.
If you want, I'll piss in your urn.
Yeah, might as well. Make maybe you'll nice have to talk cake. To Amber about that first, though.
Oh, my God. Any more questions regarding Commando?
I've got answers for you, Joe.
Are we meant to believe that Bennett is the leak, and that's how this rogue of terrorists hunts down his team? Because I got the impression that they couldn't even find each other if they wanted to. That's how deep it was.
Yeah. No, that one is weird. That's a good question. I don't know who... because. There is no leak other than somebody got paid, I guess, within Kirby's unit.
I think it's just like another, like...
Who gives a shit?
Oversight. I think there's just like another oversight in terms of the primary goal of this movie, which is just... I mean, because this is Arnold exploitation.
Yeah, 100%.
100% Arnold exploitation.
And I think if we knew the answer to it, we would say that scene could go.
I agree.
I think that's in like an hour, 45-minute cut.
Because all the exposition dump scenes that we do get in this movie, it's like, I understand why it's there. Any more of that would be like, oh my God, cut this down. Because the director's cut, which I have seen, I would not recommend because aside from like some additional blood and guts during the shed scene, there's really nothing that movie adds, like other than like some exchange between Radon Chung and... Matrix, where it's their introductory scene, is just like one last button on that scene in terms of dialogue before they get to the Galleria, and she asks her because she finds out that he's a retired colonel, and she says like, oh, so my tax dollar is going into your pension, and he goes, yes. And she goes, figures. And that's all that's really added. Eh. So,
is it really a director's cut, or is it just like? I think it's random, like, and extended cut.
I highly doubt that this was approved by Mark Lester.
Yeah, because a lot of times you'll get those quote director's cuts that are really just an extended cut that has extra stuff.
DVD does come with a theatrical cut, which is that's cool.
Because I mean, like the Dawn of the Dead, the quote director's cut of Dawn of the Dead wasn't George Romero's cut. The quote director's cut of Alien and Aliens, gimmick. You know, they. Basically, Ridley Scott and James Cameron agreed to add that footage back in and just call it a director's cut or whatever, but they're really just extended cuts.
It's not like Ridley Scott going back and doing Blade Runner.
Exactly. It was a different beast than that.
I mean, there ought to be an actual director's cut for Commando because I want more of that. I want more backstory between Bennett and Matrix. I want to know more about that relationship.
Sometimes director's cuts are shorter, too. It's like sometimes the director goes in and tightens it up.
Yeah.
I mean, and to the film's benefit, I say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oftentimes, yes. Mm-hmm. I think what you want really, though, is just a prequel. I think that's the issue.
I mean, it's a little late for a prequel because you cannot duplicate that John Matrix. Like, he's just got to be a killing machine.
I say we do like a sequel. We get Alyssa Milano back. Little Jenny Matrix kicking ass.
There we go.
And it's her and then Bennett's clone.
Oh no! I think it should have cyborg nothing to clone. Do. I think it should have nothing to do with anything that happens in the first Commando. It's just that Jenny Matrix, of course, because she's been training all of her life to become a survivalist, kick-ass, just nonstop killing machine.
Well, Vernon Wells, play in the Power Rangers, his bad guy was like a cyborg guy. So maybe Bennett comes back as the cyborg and he turns out to be the villain from Power Rangers. And then Alyssa Milano and the Power Rangers have to team up to fight Vernon Wells.
As long as Vernon Wells is the antagonist, that's the connection to Commando. That's as long as Vernon Wells plays the antagonist, like
he's the other president of Val Verde.
Was the antagonist in Fury Road, as Hugh Keyes Burns was also the antagonist toe cutter in Mad Max.
Yeah,
he was both Mad Max and Immortan Joe. That's how you do that connection. Just get Vernon Wells back as the antagonist. It's Alyssa Milano as a lead, and then you just think of this most balls to the wall, batshit insane action movie.
Well, Joe, you're the closest one of us to Los Angeles, so you're gonna have to make this.
Yeah, I'll head out tonight. I'll be there in like 4 hours. Get the ball rolling.
Set up a Google Drive. We'll throw in some ideas for this here and there. We're gonna write the sequel to Commando.
Going Commando.
But before we do that, were there any more questions in regards to Commando?
I'm out of questions, so maybe we should talk about the guilty pleasures of characters in Commando.
All right. Yes.
So Tyler, why don't you choose a character to give to either Jeff or I to tell you their guilty pleasure?
Joe, what is Sully's guilty pleasure?
Awesome. Jeff, you pick for Tyler then.
Kirby.
General Franklin Kirby.
And then Jeff, you can do the Bill Paxton character.
All right.
Got it. I really want to know.
I got it already.
I also got it too.
Bill Paxton, he feels unfulfilled as this like flight radar guy. You know, he's like, hey, don't go over there in your airplane. You're going to get shot down, whatever. But he got into the job because he's a really big fan of radar in general, right? But what he really wants to do is to take up storm chasing because he likes that radar better. And he becomes the protagonist of Twister.
At what point does he meet the Helen Hunt character? Like, is this during their relationship the first time around, or is it after he gets out of the service?
It's that night. He's like, man, these people, they flew off into like this no-fly zone or whatever. And he's like, this sucks. You know, my job sucks. Everything sucks. Nobody will listen to me when I tell them not to fly into this no-fly zone and get killed. I'm going to go down to the restaurant and bar in the mall and hunt some slash. And that's...
And he finds Helen Hunt.
And he finds Helen Hunt there.
Oh. Oh, no.
And then, so even though there is no sequel to Commando, there technically is through his character. It's a spinoff, not a sequel, a spinoff, right?
It's a spinquil.
It's a spinquil, yeah. It's a squeakquel, if you will.
Yeah. There we go. All right. Joe, did you want to go?
I think I have one for Sully.
Let's hear it.
I think Sully is a little bit before his time. If he had lived to the 90s, he would be all into American Online and chat rooms and cyber sex. God. You know, pretending as a 19-year-old fucking other guys who are pretending to be 19-year-old girls. But I think in 85, his guilty pleasure is like posting to newspaper dating ads or whatever. But he like still pretends to be a 19-year-old lesbian trying to like rope other young hot lesbians into like inner like that correspondence. So it's very expensive and weird, but and no one's really taken him up on it yet, but I think he likes to do that. I think he likes to pretend to be someone he's not, who's way hotter than he is and definitely going to get laid.
Yeah, I can see that. That's also super creepy too, which is also in fitting of his character. So very, very nicely done.
Way creepy.
Yeah. As for General Franklin Kirby, I mean, what it would be the guilty pleasure of somebody who teaches his top commandos to be.
Oh, I figured out Kirby's
silent and smooth.
Silent and smooth, God, just like always. Kirby. Yeah, actually, this is kind of an open guilty pleasure. I open this up to everybody here because I want to hear everybody on General Franklin Kilby.
The silent and smooth. Clearly, he's shaving his cadets.
He's shaving his cadets whilst preparing for world, whilst getting his people, his men prepared for World War III.
Yeah, shave up and go commando.
That is a literal lie in the movie. What to expect when John Matrix comes onto the scene? World War III.
Yeah,
and whenever the job is done, it's like, what'd you leave for us? Just bodies. Completely unfazed by that. He's what like, would right. be that guy's guilty pleasure?
I think his guilty pleasure is selling the whereabouts of his former Marines to terrorists.
Good call.
Oh, like, I think his guilty pleasure, and it's also been imposed upon his men, basically, are ways of dealing with your homosexuality.
Oh, he's
mandated
homosexuality. It's like they're all part of their regiment, part of their training regiment, that they all have to like go up behind him and then take the gun from his holster, like doing those kind of exercises over and over.
No, I like that
silent
actually.
And smooth, because that's like, because he's old, like it's hard for him to get it up anymore. So
I like this either way you play it, because either it's one of these things where he's like, I've got to train the best commandos. Mm-hmm. And in Sparta, they mandated homosexuality so that people would be willing to die for each other.
Yeah.
And so he tries to do that with his group. Or because it's 1985 during the Don't Ask, Don't Tell era.
Yeah.
He ends up taking on willingly a bunch of closeted gay soldiers and like creating a task force out of them, so that they don't get in trouble with the rest of the military.
But what if it's a bit of both? Because here's the thing, it would still make more sense if he was like a Sparta type character in that era, because he still had to answer to
somebody.
So
he did this on purpose. He gathered together an elite troop of closeted gay soldiers.
Whilst he himself is also closeted, closeted homosexual, because he also has to answer to somebody.
Hmm.
But because there is a chain of events, like, because they talk about a president.
And truly, my favorite thing about the movie, if I haven't made it clear, is that this is really a queer film that all dads who are like anti-queer love.
It's a thing. It's a queer film by accident, but at the same time, like the movie has.
I don't know.
That's the thing. Who knows what Mark Lester had to say?
I could ask him.
Especially would you ask him? If you could, would you ask him? Because here's the thing, like, Commando has endured in so many ways. Like,
there's got to be an interview with him out there where he talks about it.
Yeah, because, like, in terms of, like, a homoerotic cinema of the 1980s, like, you've got, what, Nightmare on Elm Street to Freddy's Revenge. You have Top Gun. You have Rocky III is another one.
Is Rocky III? I haven't watched that in a while.
Oh, that's the one with the training montage between he and Apollo Creed.
Oh, yeah.
This is after Mickey dies, and that wonderful scene of the two of them on the beach.
Rocky III is the best.
Oh, Rocky III is great.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to pick a favorite. I just know the one that I don't like, and that's 4. I mean, 4 is stupid.
4 is super stupid.
4 is nothing like Rocky or Creed, or even like Rocky 2 or Creed 2 for that matter. Like, nothing like it. It's like, what is this?
Yeah.
It's Rocky single-handedly ending the Cold War. It is so dumb. And it's such a straightforward action
Mark
film.
Lester flatly denies that Bennett is gay. There you go.
Well,
So according to the filmmakers, they didn't see that there. But of course, I mean, that's not to say that that is exactly what the text is, because of course, when you release a text, the text is no longer exactly as you defined it, right?
I mean, the audience is audience part of that interpretation.
Yeah, yeah. At this point, the movie is done. It doesn't matter what the filmmakers are saying.
It doesn't.
What matters is what the audience receives. And like we've kept mentioning about Bennett, is that he's dressed like Freddie Mercury. And Freddie Mercury is an LGBTQIA icon, because he was a bisexual. So, and also Vernon Wells, because of how he portrays this character, especially right before the fight kicks off, it's practically orgasmic in terms of like just how much he just goes all in and just completely loses himself.
Well, what's interesting here, what I'm reading, Mark Lester says in the DVD commentary, I don't know what people are saying when they say that to me. He seems to me like the most macho soldier or person you could think of. What's fascinating about that is that ultimately, being macho and manly has nothing to do with how gay you are, right? I mean, like,
yeah.
If like gayness, and people often associate gayness with in men with femininity, but that's a false association.
It is, you know? A false association.
So there's no connection there, and I think that just proves it, right? That that to him, he's like, I'm going to make this guy super super macho, but that's not to say that somebody who's gay isn't also super super macho. I'm really effeminate, like, in many ways, and yet
I'm way more effeminate than either of the two characters. But I definitely get like a history of Bennett and Matrix.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, he works for free because he's so scolded by his former lover / commanding officer.
Because here's the thing, like, you know, maybe Matrix found someone else. He found a woman, therefore making him a bisexual. I mean, especially with like how he's photographed, because like
or queer in some way. Maybe he's not.
Yeah, he could be queer in some way.
Maybe he's more open than bisexual.
Yeah, hey, you know what? Rock on. And here's the thing, like, you know, Charlton Heston had no idea that Ben-Hur was supposed to be
rock
bisexual
out with your log out.
So, I mean, that's the thing. And or you could also read that perhaps like Bennett was being like way too much in his advances, while still retaining that, you know, Matrix could still be queer.
That's a very common thing among the bad guys in this movie, is they're too forward with their...
They're incredibly forward, like,
with their sexuality and their demands. Mm-hmm. So he's more predatory than, you know, anybody's comfortable with. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like this movie a lot.
Yeah.
I do.
It's a great film.
It's super fun.
Well, it's great in terms of, yes, how fun it is, how it doesn't really take itself seriously at all. It knows exactly what it is. You're in and you're out when you watch it. And like, even with like an admittedly kind of slow second act in parts.
In spots, yeah.
It's in spots. It's not like the entirety of the second act.
No,
it's
just like the in between the fighting is like, there are plenty of moments where it's like, come on, didn't the movie open with a climax?
Well, it's the thing, it's like, you know, every action scene in this movie is like a climax. Like the opening action scene outside of the house is a climax with the car, with the truck going down the hill, and then he gets into a fight with all those guys who apparently forget how to use
He jumps off an airplane.
And then he jumps off an airplane. And before that, like, he's getting into a fight with a bunch of guys and winning, and also by using an AK-47 as a bludgeoning device.
Yeah.
Because everybody, and it helps that everybody temporarily forgets how an AK-47 works. Because they point at it, but they don't know what to do, so he's just beating all of them until he gets apprehended by one of the henchmen. And then there's an amazing intro shot of Bennett in his full, fabulous Freddie Mercury outfit.
Yeah.
That doesn't fit him. but then, yeah, the fight in the mall is like a climax.
Yeah.
Him jumping out of a plane is like a climax.
Him versus Bill Duke.
It's like a climax.
If Duke had been the Bennett character.
Especially because, like, how he dies, because he gets impaled on the table. You know, so we never talked about during the middle of the Bill Duke fight, the fight goes into a different hotel room, and it's this couple that's filming like their own sex tape.
Yeah, something's going on.
Are they filming it? I didn't see the camera.
Yeah, because there is a camera on a tripod at a certain point during the fight scene that's pointed directly at the bed.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't notice that.
That's pretty good. It's a nice touch.
And that's where... And also, listeners, that's also where the TNA happens, like the one and only TNA. And it is
really out of place.
Oh, it's gratuitous. It's laughable, but that's just because
it felt like a compromise.
It
felt like they wanted a sex scene with Schwarzenegger and Radon Chong, and they're like, no, it doesn't make sense because his daughter's missing. He'd be focused on that. Yeah. It's like, well, let's have him crash into the adjoining hotel room and someone's fucking in there. It's like, okay.
And then someone flashes their tits.
Yeah.
And it was Schwarzenegger.
I'll say, like, there's more titty jiggling from Schwarzenegger than there are from the actress in that scene.
Oh, it's I need a gif of him rowing shirtless.
That's
the best one.
that is just magnificent.
There's bound to be one.
Probably, and I also need a 4K of his full body coming up on the beach where he's just nothing but a Speedo. Pulling the inflatable raft up along the shore.
I watched it today on my new 4K TV, and it was pretty great.
Oh, yeah. So.
We should probably get to the plugs and recommendations and wrap up. Yes. We're getting a little long. So
well, I mean, we're actually, I think we've surpassed the runtime for the movie at this
point.
We
sure have.
Oh, I'm sure we have.
Even after some editing on
this podcast, even with editing, it'll probably still be over the...
All right.
It'll probably be right about hour and a half, yeah.
So, what would you gentlemen like to plug?
Why don't you lead us off, Tyler? What do you got?
Yeah, sure, Tyler. Sure
thing. First thing I must plug. My first week of 2019 involved my apartment having a disaster of a flood.
Oh, Jesus.
It seems to be, I'm seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, but that being said, my cohort Boogaloo Ojeda and I are going to need a little help. And so if you go to GoFundMe and you search under ThrillPad Flood Recovery, you'll check out the GoFundMe page. And the thing is, and with the ThrillPad Productions, you can check us out also on Facebook. And we are going to be in the midst of presenting Tugs Chooses the Best and Worst of 2018.
Looking forward to that.
Actually, and this one was actually kind of hard to pick some of the worst ones because a lot of the ones that I saw in the theater I really liked. The last one being Roma, which I highly recommend. And then two others that I saw were The River and Leave No Trace. Please follow the Facebook page and Instagram Mollusk Movie. Mollusk is the short film that is currently in production, which is a bit of a brainchild that I've been talking about for a couple of years on Cinemuck, and I may have even brought this up on previous episodes of Quote Unquote Guilty, but it's this pet project of mine is now coming into fruition, and you'll be able to see stills from the movie and posters for the film, and then you'll also get some updates in terms of the progress of the short as well.
Jeff, what do you got to plug and recommend?
All right. So, of course, you can hear more of me on the show that I co-host with my son, who's 7 years old, and it's called Cadaver Cast, and we talk about monster movies. So check that out wherever you listen to podcasts. Hopefully it is there, Cadaver Cast. We are on Twitter at cadaver_cast. I was also on an episode of a podcast recently, Dave's Pop Culture Podcast. Dave's awesome. Go listen to him, even if you don't listen to the one with me, where we just talk horror movies. We geek out about horror for, I don't know, it was a long time. We were just geeking out.
I want to recommend two movies. I watched two documentaries. Hulu and Netflix both put out documentaries about the Fire Festival from a couple years ago.
Oh, I just watched the one on Netflix. Yeah.
I watched the Hulu one too. It really completes the tale, I think. I'll plug our Twitter at Quote Guilty. I'll plug our Facebook community group, the Quote Unquote Club. Patreon.com/wordsout if you want to throw us a couple bucks and listen to Patreon exclusive content like Cinemuck and Loose Cannons and High Five. High Five!
High five.
we put a lot of work into that. You know, it gets a little crazy during the semester, but we still try. And we appreciate any patronage.
So. Tyler and I will have some sort of Cinemuck someday. I swear it.
Me and Andrew are going to do a list of shame too very soon. So that might be out by the time this is out. It should be.
Did either of our new high fives drop?
The 2018-ish one did. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, that's all I got. I want to thank you guys for coming on. This was a weird discussion, but it was really fun.
Things got strange. A weird discussion
for a weird, funny action film.
Totally.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. Well, we'll do it again soon, buddy.
You fucking whore.
All right. Can't top that. You are not guilty, everyone. Good night.
Used to think the perfect girl was only in my dreams, till I saw your perfect face upon the movie screen. You seemed to know that I was there as though from God's design. And as I cried, I told myself someday you'd be mine. Radon Chong, baby, won't you hear my song? I have loved you for so long.